Welcome to 2019 and to this new episode of OMR Media. I'm Pia Frey, co-founder of Opinory, and on this podcast I'm interviewing interesting, outstanding people from the media industry. And today we have a very outstanding interesting guest, which is Tim Urban. Tim is the author and founder of WaitButWhy.com. WaitButWhy is a genius blog that was born somehow out of procrastination and made Tim become the most popular and widest known writers on the internet. This is WaitButWhy in one word .com. On WaitButWhy, he dives deep into complex questions about life, technology, and our future in the most entertaining, funny, and quirky ways. You recognize his articles by this little sticky man that he uses to illustrate his stories. If you don't know WaitButWhy yet, check it out, but you might also have seen Tim on one of the most popular TED Talks on why procrastinators procrastinate. He has also partnered with Elon Musk, explaining some of the very complex parts about SpaceX on his blog. In our conversation, we've been focusing on the question how WaitButWhy became so big, with more than 1.5 million monthly readers. And the fascinating part is that Tim accidentally anticipated all larger media trends and buzzwordy hypes of the media industry. When his articles went viral, he wanted to own his users and started an email newsletter, and he wanted to make some money, so he started a merchandise. His users were loyal and willing to pay for stuff, so he started a membership model with thousands of subscribers paying between $1 and $100, and so on and so on. And I think there's a lot to learn for larger organizations by just listening how one person would turn content, by the way, very long articles, into cash flow positive business. And in this conversation, he shares how this all came to be, and also told me why he hasn't published anything since about 8 months. What is a blogger without content? But there is an explanation, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. And there's one more thing. I've heard the very funny critique that I'm too buddy-like with my interview partners, and that our conversations sound as if I was about to close a deal with them. Well, so just to satisfy these prejudices, I've known Tim for a while, so there is certainly a buddy tone in this conversation, and we also had an idea about a collaboration during this conversation, so happy to confirm these preconceptions, but now just enjoy our conversation. Welcome, Tim Urban. Tim, I know you've told the story many, many times, and it might not be the most interesting story for you, but for our audience, where some of them might know you yet, but will know you very well after this podcast, for them, I want to start very basically, what are you doing and how did you become one of the most famous writers and bloggers on the internet?
I think it was like 2013. I had been, running a test prep, like a tutoring company for students who wanted to go to college in the US to take the test. I won't go into that further. It's very boring. We had we had this great company, my friend and I, Andrew, and, I was writing on the side, and I just wasn't really feeling running, being in the business world. I really wanted to be doing my own kind of creative thing. So Andrew and I talked about it and kind of said, well, why don't I just kind of branch off and start a different project of some kind? And so we didn't really know where it was going to become. And that was WaitButWhy. And started with just me writing, and that's actually just what it kind of turned into was me writing, because we didn't really know where it was going to go. But
it started with a genius different name.
There's so many different potential bad names. It started as WaitButWhy, but before it started, I was on GoDaddy for 16 hours just
GoDaddy,
which is like, it's where you find .com,
yeah.
And I was just clicking through, and trying to find any reasonable.com that was available and not having a very easy time of it. There's a huge list of names I'm happy I didn't pick. Although at the time, you know, if I hadn't picked Wait But Why, that would be on the list. I'd be like, imagine that. So you get used to whatever you pick. So,
but that doesn't differentiate you yet from a couple of millions of other people who started a blog back then. But what happened then?
Yeah. So, at the time, I had been blogging on the side for years, just a little blog I wasn't really taking very seriously. I wasn't putting very much time into, but. I knew that I liked to do a couple things that I think maybe were a little different. I liked to draw illustrations that go into the blog. That really was a big part of... it was really only the last like 7 or 8 blog posts on the old blog that I started doing that. Part of what we had for our online test prep company was these drawing tablets that we used, that tutors used to like, you know, do a lesson for a student through Skype, so they could like kind of a whiteboard online. So I had one of those in my office, and I was kind of writing something, and I thought, oh, it'd be so much better if I could just illustrate it. And so I just tried it, and I really liked it, and that was like totally like, oh, this is such a good like addition to what I'm doing. So then 2 years later, when I start Wait But Why, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna bring that into it. So I'm gonna draw lots of illustrations. I also, just as a reader, I don't like long blocks of text. I like visuals, like colorful. I like things to basically be like, look like it's 4 or 5 year old. That always seems to be more entertaining to me than just like a block of adult text is very, I don't like that. And so that was one thing. And then I also just, I guess I'm just kind of a perfectionist, which, you know, is the bane of my existence, but it also can help make the blog posts high quality, because I will, I'll just, you know, spend as long as I need to on one until it's done. And the plan from the beginning...
That can range between a couple of hours and a couple of years?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. It's the shortest, I would say like the quickest post I've ever done on Wait But Why has taken me like 9 hours. And most of them were take a week. A week is like the standard kind of quote short post, where I would, for me, short is still a long article. It's like 3,000 words, something like that, 2,500 words, which is like a pretty lengthy article. But for me, that's the shortest I'll go, just because I just like to really go in depth. And this is a little bit of my perfectionism, but it's also just the way I like to learn. Like when someone's either learning or a discussion about something, I really want someone to go the full distance. I really want to know what's going on. So I'll do that as a writer. I'll get into the depths of something.
You're very broad in the topics where you go into depth, right? Did you start with an editorial agenda?
No, not at all. Like it was the very beginning, one of the things was to try to like go viral and make this a thing. That's not like a focus now. It's almost the opposite, where it's like the really viral topics are often not the like the things I think are most interesting. But at the beginning, that was like a huge thing. It was like getting clicks, you know, one of those. I never ever intended to like go down the full like let's like game the SEO thing and get pick the like really carefully pick clever headlines and put the right keywords. And I didn't quite go to that distance because, this was when BuzzFeed was really getting rolling and things like Upworthy were getting hot. I also just wasn't going to out BuzzFeed. I wasn't going to, you know, they have something like, I don't know, a few thousand staff, and I have one person, me.
But somehow then you outperformed BuzzFeed, at least in some ways. I think in article engagement, relatively, you definitely outperformed BuzzFeed.
Right. I was never going to outperform them in traffic. But when it comes to how long someone spends on an article, how much they think about that article afterwards, how much they really want to evangelize it and like tell people to read it, email me after, comment in the comment section. That kind of like...
You have tens of thousands of comments.
Yeah, that kind of like yeah, relationship with the blog posts. That I was like, that I can maybe, you know, maybe like we can beat BuzzFeed here. And it was like, you know, I can out quality them if I can't out quantity them. So that was the idea, was just never going for quantity, never going for like, you know, we have to get 3 articles up a day. So I started with twice a week, then it turned to once a week, then it turned to much less than that. So what happened is,
I think your last post is from April. You're a blogger without
yeah,
without
well, I have a problem at the moment. Right now I've been mired.
I want to ask you about your problem that you have right now. But yeah, First we need to get the numbers right. So so your audience grew to now about more than 1 million, definitely monthly.
Yeah, yeah, it's a pretty consistent, you know, around 1 million a month, and then if I'm writing a lot, it goes higher than that.
And all of this, or this size and this scale, started, I think, with one article that somehow just...
Well, there were really two. So the very first article the very first article I did was called 7 Ways to Be Insufferable on Facebook. And it was, that's a very classic, like, BuzzFeedy type headline, because at the time I didn't know what this was yet. And I was thinking, what's going to get clicks? Because, you know, it was an article I wanted to write anyway. But then I tried to, you know, put the headline and everything to be something that would get clicks and something that would, you know, maybe piss people off and go viral. And it kind of did. It was, it got my old blog, for reference, had 250,000 visitors in 6 years combined. This article had 500,000 in the first month. So it had, you know, that was like shocking. It was like crazy. I was like, oh my God, this article. And at the time I thought that was like the most viral article I could ever possibly do.
Of course.
And then 9 other articles happened that were shorter, and some did okay, some, you know, not much. Most of the traffic was on that first article. And then I wrote an article like 2 months into this called Why Generation Y Yuppies Are Unhappy, or something like that. It was an article about millennials.
A very good article about millennials. I think the best article I know about millennials.
Oh, well, thank you.
Until today.
Yeah. It was, you know, I look, at the time I was dating a millennial. I had 2 sisters who were millennials. I spent as a tutor when I was tutoring. I tutored 1 million of millennials. Like, I knew this crowd. And I myself am like on the edge, the older edge of millennials. So I think I had a sense of the psychology of this perfect storm of misery that this crew was going through. So I wrote that article and posted it, and it just exploded. It went to a whole
different... What channel did it initially explode? Was it Facebook?
Yeah, it was. Because, you know, yeah, that Facebook, I don't know if it still is as much as it was, but it was an incredible viral engine back then for articles. So if you post something and it starts getting activity, the algorithm started spreading it like crazy. So that for sure helped. And then just a lot of people were just forwarding it to each other. And then Huffington Post reached out and they said, can we post this on our front page as like one of the sidebar, like, you know, editorials. And, you know, now I think about, you know, is that the right match? At the time I was like, wow, a real thing wants to post. So I was like, sure, of course. So they posted and it blew up there and ended up being their like number one most read article of all of September 13.
And then when you saw this crazy numbers, were you aware that this would be the base of your living for the next decades?
Honestly, even when the very first article, because I like this enough, it's such a fun thing for me, that even when the first article did pretty well, I said, okay, I'm going to do this for a long time. This, because I didn't know, the old blog never went viral because it was earlier and there were no drawings, most of them, and they were more like stories about my day. But I was like, okay, so like I can do this well enough to like, you know, get a real audience here. So, and then with the second, yeah, when that second article blew up, it was like, yeah, still don't know exactly what this is going to be, but I'm like, I'm in. I'm like, this is very exciting. I'm like, there's people here now. The email list went from 300 before that article. We had 300 people subscribed to 30,000 after. So
that's super interesting, I think, because getting a hit through Facebook was fairly doable, especially at that time. But then turning this viral hit into a loyal audience that signs up and that asks for more and that comes back to the site, and especially when it's just a when it's a site where nobody has heard the name before. That's fascinating how you transitioned these viral flybys that were excited about the being analyzed by you and their millennial struggles, turning these into a like a loyal audience.
Yeah, well, so that is, it's what I noticed is that the going viral does not guarantee that, because, and you know this, everyone knows this as a consumer. If you click on if someone's sending you something, and you, and this article is everywhere for a few days, whatever, and you've seen it on your feed a few times, and you click on it, and you read it, either you love it or you like it or you don't like it. Either way, you're just it's just some blogger, I don't know, or it's, you don't even know what it is. It might be some like news site, I don't even know, but it's an op-ed somewhere, and you read it, and you click out. And maybe you forward it, but you often don't even look at what the site is. You don't even care who wrote it, really. Now, sometimes you do. Sometimes you like it enough and you'll go. And there were, in this case, a good amount of people who did do that, who then went to the other articles, because while this article was blowing up, the cool thing is that there were 10 articles up total. So the whole site went viral. So all the other articles had suddenly tens of thousands of people on them. One of those articles, which was like this graphic I did about like history going back, timelines like cascading going back to the Big Bang, that article blew up and had almost as many people on it as the millennials article for a while. Like, so I think it helped that there were other things on the site, so that I would say probably 90% of people clicked it, left, disappeared, and still don't know what Wait But Why is. Like, they don't. They might have been back on the site and not even, you know, connected that that's the same site as that other article. But I think maybe 10% of the people, or whatever the number is, actually went and said, well, what is this? And then started clicking through and then got hooked and then subscribed to the email list. And so
I think the sticky man did the magic. I mean, the combination of the writing and the in-depth writing and the sticky figures.
Yeah, I think that the drawings help, because the reason it helps is, I think you sometimes need, like, I've been on, there's things I love right now, whether it's a YouTube channel or a blog, where I've been on it and I've said, wait a second. And I see in the sidebar, I say, isn't this, and it's only like on the third or fourth visit, I'm like, oh, this is the same thing that did that thing that I loved. And then suddenly it all clicks and I'm like, oh wait, I love this like creator. And it all clicks at the same time. And then I start binging through all the videos or all the articles. And then suddenly I like convert. And now I'm like, this is one of my favorite things. And I'm telling people to go to it. But the first two times I didn't even like care or think about what it was. Cause I assumed it was some one-off thing. It was not till later I'm like, oh, this is the same thing who did this. So I think that the stick figures help, because it's something where you can, you're a little bit, maybe you only need two or three.
It's recognizable.
Touches. Yeah, you're gonna be like, oh right, that thing, and so that's helpful. And then the other thing that I think was a big part of it is that early on we realized that like Facebook, we were going for, because what are you pushing for? So at the bottom of every article, you have right it there all the people who really like it. You have one chance to get them to do something. Is it follow us on Facebook or Twitter? Is it subscribe to email? Is it, you know, something else? Is it share here? You know, here are the share buttons. You know, you can do all those things at the bottom, but what's first? And what's the thing that in your sidebar of the front page of the blog is the most prominent? And what's the thing that you're just pushing for in general?
The single call to action.
Yes. And so we realized early on that Facebook and Twitter were not those are really hugely helpful. But first of all, you're relying on someone else's algorithm and someone else's popularity. What if in 5 years no one goes on those anymore? And now we have all these followers, it's useless. Or what if they start charging, making us pay a huge amount of money to reach even like half of our followers, which is what they did.
Were these real considerations that you had back then? Because back then Facebook was still like the big buddy that helped everybody
It was
excel
huge. It was so helpful, but they started... like a couple months in, charging like huge amounts of money, which we, you know, we started paying because we thought it was worth it to reach your own followers. So that's when you see sponsored mm-hmm. posts. It's often just someone trying to reach the people who have followed them. And you can do it targeted. We tried all that. But either, and we said, this is great. And we're going to keep trying with this. But the thing that is way more important is email, because email is just really less likely to disappear. I think email will maybe shift in popularity or shift in it as a key tool, but it's going to be slower. It's less likely. It's more likely. And it's, and I can just reach out and there is the whole email audience kind of like, even, and especially for someone like me who doesn't write regularly. So people forget about that I exist after a while and I have to remind everyone. And an email is a way to just like have this floating audience ready wherever you are. You're like, okay, I'm ready. And there's the audience suddenly in front of you because you just ping them. So I think that pushing for that helped build a loyal thing. Because when you have the email subscribers, they can't forget about you because you're going to keep reminding them there's a new article and they're going to become regular readers.
How many email subscribers do you have right now?
I think like 650,000.
Mm-hmm. That's big. So I think that's the one thing that you did intuitively or with very good analytics that the whole industry got a couple of years later, right? And the other thing that I find interesting, where you were kind of an early bird, was with your own merchandising. When did that start and how did it start and what role does it play now?
So this was, you know, early on... it was all well and good that it was doing well, but this was still supposed to be a business because that was kind of the plan. You know, I have a business partner and he's running our other thing and I'm running this thing. And so we don't want this thing leeching off the other company. You know, I my salary at least and all of the other, there's just a lot of upkeep. There's just glitches on the site. You need developer, you know, developer salary sometimes. You've got at the time pretty big budget for Facebook advertising. You have hosting, and the more when you start getting a lot of visitors, you actually need to pay a lot for hosting. There's just a lot of little things like that, and then my whole life has to be paid by this. You know, we can't. It's not the other company has employees like that are. It's not fair to them to basically be like, oh, this company has less resources than it normally would because some of them are going to this thing that you're not involved in. So, there was, you know, we didn't like banner ads. Because they're just not really our. It's not really. This is supposed to be a really high end, just kind of like intimate, high quality thing where it just felt wrong to have this like cheesy ad.
You didn't want to. You didn't want you to treat your users in a bad way.
It felt to. In general, ads feel to me like I'm trying to create this special community, this special place for people to come and like dig deep, and they come, and meanwhile, I invite like. I don't know, Crest toothpaste to come and to like kind of like sell things annoyingly and then hand me a cut of the money on the way out that they made. I'm like, what? No, Crest, like get out of here. This is not what we do here. So that's what banner ads were to me. So instead, thought, you know, what's like, look, we have a lot of extra engagement. So, and we're not going for huge traffic anyway, which is what banner ads are best for. So what makes more sense for that? Well, really engaged people might want to actually buy a t-shirt or a poster or maybe even a stuffed animal since I have all these little animal characters that I draw. And that might make the same amount of money and be a lot and actually like deepen people's brand kind of attachment versus annoy them while they're here and make it feel like just another, you know, site that's trying to, you know, it's not that everything against creators that use banner ads is obviously sometimes it's the best way to do it, but we just had a way we thought could work better. And it did, it definitely covered the same, it brought in the same revenue, you know, that is similar that, even more than banner ads were doing. And it was helpful. Yeah.
And how much revenue do you make with this, with the stuffed animals and the t-shirts?
It ranges, like, you know, right now I'm not writing enough that I feel weird, like, popping out of nowhere to, like, sell to anything. So I'm not really pushing it now, but...
Oh, no, Tim, for Christmas, you could, for the holidays, you could absolutely sell, I think.
Yeah, but I'm not, but I don't like to do it when, I only like to do that when I've been publishing recently so that people are, like, if I were a reader and I was waiting for this article to come out or waiting for this site to publish something. And then, and I was waiting and waiting, and then they started selling stuff. I would kind of be like, work on your
thing. Yeah, you want to treat your audience with care. And yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I just
understand.
Have a really... I feel
but
like
how
I
much is it so when you're publishing?
Yeah, yeah. So it always gets some because, you know, there's a store button on the side of the site and at the bottom of the post that have the little stuffed animal, the little animal characters, then we'll sell the stuffed animals there and sell the poster at the bottom of another article that has a poster for it. So whatever it is, like there's plenty of sales going on just for people who are on the site anyway. And you know, it doesn't do amazingly, but it probably makes $100,000 a year when we're pushing it. And I think it could go a lot higher if I put a little more attention into the store and make some like, you know, make some products that are the same level of like originality and interest that the posts are. You know, right now it's t-shirts, it's posters, it's a little more obvious stuff. So that's something we can get to at some point, but haven't quite really dug in there. But that's partially because we found another revenue stream that was even better and really now that covered everything. That plus the store, like we were good, and that's Patreon. I never liked the idea of, you know, pushing for donations. I was just, I think a lot of creators, when they offer something for free, at the, you know, early on especially, they become very, they feel weird about charging for anything. And I a couple times would, you know, put out an ebook or a PDF. We'd make a PDF of the really long post, like a really high quality one, and charge $3 for it. And I would kind of like apologize as I'm saying, it's $3. That's because, you know, we're just trying to cover our costs for it. You know, we're not trying. And readers would write back and be like, it's okay to make money. We want you to make money. We want you to, you know, it's like, you don't have to apologize. And I started to realize, I was like, right. It's like, I'm providing value. Like, we're in a capitalist society here. Like, I'm supposed to charge for something. You know, like, that's the deal. It was actually the site. It's a German site, Kurzgesagt. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. Kurzgesagt.
Kurzgesagt?
Yes. Kurzgesagt? Yes. In a nutshell, it means, right? It's the best YouTube channel. It literally is the number one YouTube channel in the world, in my opinion. So everyone should look, watch it. It's just unbelievably good animated explainer videos. This guy, Philip Detmer, runs it. Amazing dude. He and I became friends because we collaborated on something. He reached out and... about an article I did, and we that Cascading Timelines article. Anyway, we then would compare notes because we're both started this around the same time, trying to figure out. He was on YouTube, I was a blog, but trying to figure out how to do all this. And he said, "You got to do Patreon," and I kept saying, oh, "I don't know. It's just I'm asking for money." He was like, "Just try. It doesn't. Everyone, your readers wants to. Is they're happy if you're getting supported, and it'll be good." So I finally said, "Okay, I'll try it." And
when was that?
That was in 2015, like late 2015. And you know, up to this point, I really needed an employee, but there wasn't the money for it. Like I was really like if there was something with the site was glitching or we needed to upgrade our servers or something, or we just, you know, all these emails coming in and I was the only one. I mean, Andrew, you know, my business partner, he was working on it a little bit, but he was tied up with the other company. So I was spending a lot of more increasing amount of my time not writing. Such a clear time to get an employee. But at the time, we really just didn't quite have the money for it. And so I started Patreon and it pretty quickly.
Yeah. Maybe just for people who don't know, Patreon is a plugin where users can donate on articles that they're reading, right?
Yeah, Patreon. The key is that we actually for a while tried like PayPal donations. We had like a support wait but why tab, and one of the items was, you know, support by sharing articles, support by buying something from the store, or donation. And it was one off. So we had all these incredibly generous people donating $5, $10, $25. And every time we said, wow, people are donating. But it doesn't
matter. What's the average amount people donate?
Well, so back then, I don't know. I thought, you know, 10 was common, maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. We got 100 from some people. We got 500 from some people. We got 1,000 from a couple. So it was awesome. It was a nice extra source, but it was small altogether because it's one off, and and we realized that it's a so Patreon. The thing about it is it's monthly, so it's basically it's a subscription almost. It's recurring monthly donations, and that is the key because you can rely on it. So the thing is, then people obviously are going to do less if it's recurring. We do have some incredibly generous $100 a month people, but you know most of them are $1 is the most common, $5 also pretty common, or you know three is common too. You know we have some that are 10, and it's actually it's interesting because so I looked at it once and if you add up the volume of people, $1 is highest, but the total revenue coming in is like a bell curve where the you know, so the main increments are like 1, 5, 10, 25, 100, and the hundreds, there's very few of them, but they add up to the same revenue as the ones, and
interesting.
And the fives and the 25s are very similar, and I think the tens are the highest. Like the tens and the fives are like the actual most revenue. It's kind of interesting how it shapes up. But the key is that it's monthly and recurring. And so, you know, some people are going to drop out every month or lower their thing. Other people are going to come in every month. So it fluctuates a little, but it's pretty steady. And that means you can build a business around it. I can't hire an employee off one-off ads and hope that, you know, that it keeps coming. So it allows you to actually build a lifestyle around it. So, yeah.
So you now live off Wait But Why with a major split of recurring subscription, Patreon-driven subscription revenues and another split of merchandising. But yep. with the subscriptions... And I want to get to the problem space now, because are the your subscribers sensitive when you are not publishing that they are still paying their $1 to $100 a month?
Yeah, so this is a huge, huge part of my. This is what I'm thinking about at 2 a.m. when I can't sleep. It's okay. It's something that always needs to be discussed because Patreon's a new kind of model. So I don't think people even know the norms yet. There's no like taboo yet. Oh, this is so bad to do this and then not publish enough. Like no one even quite knows what's okay and what's not. We're all figuring it out. And so there are two ways to do it. One is you can get paid every time you publish something. The other is you can get paid every month. Now that was a big decision because if I do every time I publish, it solves the problem you just said. I can take as long as I want. I can work on other things if I want to. It doesn't matter. And when I do this, then I get supported for it. The problem there is that I sometimes do articles that take one day, and I sometimes do articles that take a year. And so that's not a great model for that type of person. And so the thing I knew was, is that I was going to be working about the same amount every week. I was going to be full-time working on this. And I said, so if that's the case, then I should do monthly. And whatever I'm working on, I'm being supported to work on that. And I think readers would rather me, if something is going to, if I really want to dig into something and, you know, do a bunch of extra drawings for it, it's going to take an extra 2 weeks, to not worry about, oh, but we need the money coming in. They just want me, like, you know, doing the best product and then sending it out. So so I went with monthly, which is, I think, makes a lot more sense for someone like me. I don't want to, also, if I do something really short, I don't want to be like, oh, do I charge everyone for this or not? Like, it's just, I just don't like it. Yeah. I'd rather say, I'm going to, I don't know, maybe, you know, like, for example, 1 week, 2 years ago, I did an experiment. I said, I'm going to publish one thing every day this week, just five short posts. And I did that. I would have felt really weird doing that if I was charging every, you know, so this was better. I was like, I'm free. I can just, as long as I'm working hard, I don't have to feel guilty about this. And that was the idea is, you know, the thing would be really bad is if I was just taking time off and not working and these people are expecting me to work and paying. So the problem is that's fine if you're publishing every month or 2 or 3 months or 4 months even. I'm now immersed in a book length blog post, like full, like 100,000 words plus. And I think once it comes out, I'll feel a lot better. But the Patreon model is a little bit uncomfortable when you're working on something this long, and it's just.
But how long have you been working on it now?
Well, I took some time off in the middle to write a huge post on Neuralink, one of Elon Musk's companies, and another post on careers more recently, and one on relationships. So I've had a couple breaks in the middle, but this post started 2 years ago.
And wow.
Yeah, so, because it's the length of a book. It's I think that's. Because that's just where the creative, you know, that's where I'm being, like, that's where I'm being pulled right now by this post, was to really dig into it. I didn't expect to. I thought it was going to be a really short thing originally. And then it just went totally overboard.
I know, Tim, I think I know that you told me about it about 9 months ago.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I have people telling me that I think we saw each other in 2016 and you were
saying.
But
I think it's fine.
What?
I think it's fine. So I think it's about it's on a complex topic, right?
Yeah, it's all about like our political culture and our culture in general, and how we think and how we form our viewpoints and how we form tribes, and it's a lot. It gets really into a lot of stuff, and I want to get it
and
right.
And does your audience know that? And your subscribers, do they know that there's just something big cooking?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They just need to be patient.
I've kept them. They're very aware of what's going on. They're aware of the toiling I'm doing about, you know, whether to make this one big post or multiple posts. They're aware of the topic. I actually did some just for patrons videos where I actually went through some of the charts in the post and some of the ideas. So they know, and they've been like unbelievably patient. Like I don't know if I as a subscriber like would have that patience. So I'm just really grateful. And very anxious about it. Even if, because, you know, I get all these nice messages when I write to them saying, you know, don't worry, we want you to do your thing, but I don't like it. I need to get this thing out and then publish more.
When
regularly.
You plan to have it out?
What? I think it's coming early 2019 because it's getting very close to the end now. I think.
Okay. Oh wow. Okay.
It's
okay.
Very
okay.
Close.
You're about to give birth.
Yeah.
To it.
I'm in full contractions right now. So,
okay.
Working on it.
Exciting. Tim, I have a question. So if you were 23 today and you were having your company and somehow looking for a way to distribute your thoughts or to do something, to do storytelling, what do you think you would go into blogging again, or would you go for a different channel?
I think I would do blogging again because it's a medium that I like. You know, it's like Philip at Kurzgesagt is has the perfect medium for what he and his team are doing, which is these short videos, narrated animated videos. And I think that's what it used to be, that, you know, you were a you're either a writer or you make movies or, you know, documentaries. There's only four or five categories. And now there's just these big, wide open, creative, blank slates, these huge platforms, whether it's, you know, YouTube or the world of podcasting or something on like a website. But there's just you can just really make your own medium now. That's the thing that I think creative people should be trying to explore, is like, just try, make a video where you're narrating over, you know, still drawings that are switching, or make a, you know, get a whiteboard and film yourself drawing on it and talking, or do a podcast that where you know just start messing around with all the various things you can do and just try stuff. And sometimes you'll find, like, I'm not a good artist, so I never considered that drawing is something I should bring into it. But when I did it, it turned out to be, oh, wait, this is a good click for my particular kind of writing. It works. And so it's finding, like, what works. You know, maybe put music together with, so I don't know. So there's just so many options, and then you can put it out on all these different platforms and get people, connect with people who find it, because things that are really good will get found by the people who like them. And then you can, with something like Patreon, support yourself with it. So it's an awesome world for creative, but it's also, you have a tyranny of choice thing. It's, you know, there's a lot of options now, which can be a little tricky.
But why mostly lives on the blog. You do some like community offline events. I think you had dozens of millions of views of your TED talk on procrastination. But are you planning to go in different channels in the new year, like audio, for example, diversify the Wait But Why channels?
Yes.
Beyond
that. We've actually already started recording podcasts that I'm waiting till this post is out to release, to launch. But early 2019, there should also be a podcast starting. And I think my eventual...
What will it be? How will it work? What will it be about? Is it basically the same? And is it interconnected with a blog post, with a big one?
Yeah, it's the same format that we're doing right now. It's me talking to someone. And what I'm doing is I come across a lot of people in my work, whether it's for interviews or just I'm at some event and, you know, meeting people there. And there are certain people who, when I'm talking to them, it's so interesting. And I just want to, like, get everyone else to disappear so I can, like, just grill them for 2 hours. It's like there's certain people I find like that who, you know, whether they're a scientist or whether they're just really funny and they have all these interesting thoughts on everything. They have a funny thing to say about everything. And I'm targeting those people. So it doesn't matter if someone is like a famous scientist who has a Nobel Prize, but if they're boring to talk to, that's not a good person for the podcast. And on the other hand, you could have some junior scientist who no one's ever heard of, but they just know everything and they're great at explaining it. Perfect person. So I'm going for people who I have already had like awesome conversations with, and I just, or I've heard them on podcasts. I'm like, oh, this person's so good. And then I'm just talking to them for like 2 or 3 hours, like long course. That's what I do. And every couple of weeks, it'll come out like every 2 weeks. So it'll be like a long thing every 2 weeks with all different kinds
of people. Will it be again the same, like every 2 weeks and then every other week?
No. And I'll tell you why. Is because the one staff member that Wait But Why is Alicia, who runs everything that is not writing blog posts. And she's in charge of the timeline, and that's the key. Okay. That's what I learned, is that I need to take myself as far away from the timeline job as possible. So she is scheduling all the interviews, and they're just on my calendar, and I have to do them. And she is she's actually doing most of the editing, so we're going to probably have to hire someone because she's getting overloaded. But she's going to do most of the editing, all the actual, like, putting it up, and it's going to go up every 2 weeks. So that's a good thing.
Will there be advertising on the podcast?
Unclear. At the moment, no. And that's another thing about Patreon, is rather than that, we don't have to think about that at the beginning. Just start the podcast and see how it goes, and then...
Oh, Tim, I have an idea.
Yeah.
There's a new Genius flipbook coming out in January.
Oh, I've heard about this.
It's about love, and I can be become your first sponsor.
Okay, well, what do you think of that? That one of the things I've always said is, if I do any more advertising, it won't be banner ads. Whether it's advertising something to the email list or on the blog or on the podcast, it's only going to be something I personally like that I'm already telling my friends about, and that I'm already like pushing on everyone I know. That's something I would do as an ad, because it's something I think I really want people to do because it's so good. A Pia book, I think, falls under that category. So we should talk.
Okay. That's the kind of thing I do want. Let's take this offline.
It's something actually really good. So yeah.
Okay, Tim, we're getting close to our end, but I have a couple of rapid fire questions. No, and before the rapid fire questions, I must tell you something, and I think I don't know if you know, but I have a deep fascination for the stick figures, and I, in this past year, have stolen them. And have told very complicated theories around digital publishing and funnel logics with sticky figures and these who are representing the dating parallels of building connections with users in publishing and offline. So I borrowed them, and they did a very good job. And
it's surprising. It's amazing how much you can convey in a badly drawn stick figure. Like, it's amazing how subtle the expressions can be. And
I love the expressions. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, and it'll take me forever to like. I'll just have my left hand on Command Z, the undo button, and then I'll have my right hand like draw a frown. Nope. And I'll do like 18 of them, and then I'm like, there it is. And I also sometimes find that this is really embarrassing when it happens. I'll be actually inadvertently making the face with my actual face that I'm trying to draw. So someone will look at me and I'll just have this weird frown on as I'm drawing. But anyway, I'm glad you're stealing it, because it's,
you're just empathizing with a sticky figure.
Yeah. I think that it's weird. I don't know. But I think that more people should be trying to like bring illustration. I think people get daunted. They think, I'm not an artist, and I'm perfect proof of someone who is. If you say draw a horse, if you say draw like a real, like a human face that like is realistic, it will look like a second grader did it. Like, truly. And it doesn't matter, because you know, visuals can just be diagrams or whatever. Those are good, and also just simple drawings are that everyone can do. Are really fun in it when you're a reader. So I'm glad you're using them.
Yeah,
too.
They have a lot of truth in that they bring across.
Yeah.
In a simple way.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
And I kind of have a rule where anytime I can get, you know, this is this picture worth a thousand words thing. Anytime, whether it's a drawing, if I'm trying to get a certain point across, if I can do it with a stick figure, you know, comic, that's always a better choice. Or if I'm trying to get a complex concept across, and I can get it across better with a diagram, like a, you know, kind of like a XY axis, you know, where it's like, oh, you know, there's this factor and this factor, and so that's four quadrants now, and it's actually this quadrant that is the problem. You know, that is always going to be more effective and easier to remember and understand than me describing for three paragraphs how there's. Well, you can be this and this, or this and not this, and you know, and so I'm always looking for where I can replace text with drawings.
Yeah. I feel you. Okay, some rapid fire question. You have just one or very few words to answer.
Okay.
Your favorite blog.
Favorite blog, Slate Star Codex. SLATESTAR CODEX by Scott Alexander.
Okay, now I have to break the rules already, because I want to know what it is about.
It actually gets into a lot of the topics I would get into, but a lot of other stuff. He gets really deep into stuff about AI, into stuff about our cognitive biases, into he's just an unbelievable writer and very, very smart. And this is something where the articles are long, so some people will look at that down and just not. But if you can get through one, you'll then be hooked, and then you'll binge on it for 7 hours, I think. So,
even without the stick figures, well.
Yeah, he doesn't do any drawings, but they're not needed.
Who is your favorite character from the stick figure crowd?
From Wait, But Why stick figures or any stick figures?
Yeah, no, yours.
My favorite character is probably. I have the mammoth, and he's a woolly mammoth, and he's the social survival mammoth. He's the character in your head that was really important 50,000 years ago. But he's actually really problematic now, because he doesn't get that it's not going to do that. So what he does is he's incredibly concerned with what other people think of you. And he's incredibly concerned with being in the in-group and being liked and not being criticized and not being talked about badly. And he basically wants you to live your whole life for everyone else's approval, to fit in with like the cool people and to, you know, please authority and all of that. Because in the tribe, all of those things were life and death. You had to do that. So he was really important.
But these are all annoying things to have. So why do we like him?
Because he's, first of all,
he looks lovely.
He's cute. He's fluffy. I have the stuffed animal of him, and he's very, very cute. Secondly, it's important because I'll be in a situation and I'll remind myself, this is your mammoth talking. You're worried about the mammoth is the one worried right now, not you. The rational person knows that you're doing what you want to do or you're doing the right thing. But the mammoth is terrified and just ignore him. He doesn't make sense.
I get it, yeah. What's your own favorite social channel? Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Where do people find the most of you?
You know, for Wait But Why as a poster.
No. Wait.
Well, I can answer both. So I mean,
no. What's your favorite channel?
So they're just so different at this point. Like Instagram for me is where I go to just see what my friends are up to. You know, I don't go to any other thing for that. I mean, Facebook you can kind of go to for that, but I find myself using Facebook more for Wait But Why than for personal stuff. But although Facebook is the best one if you want to kind of like stalk someone, if you want to like see what's that guy from high school like up to right now, Facebook's good for that. And then Twitter has nothing to do with my friends or my personal life. Twitter is just me, you know, it used to be me going on and just getting really good links basically and just, you know, looking at funny things. Now it's become this torture chamber because I'm following all of these political related people for my current article. I've started following a lot of different people. So now it's just maddening. I go on and I see someone retweeting like some incredibly dishonest headline and I'm so angry about that. Or I just so see someone going on and retweeting like a quote taken out of context. And I just see that it's gone viral and it's so unfair to the person or it's a quote that is so infuriating. So I'm just in now like angry political zone when I go on it. So it's important for my writing because it's mm-hmm. helping me see what's really going on, but I need to get off of it after. As far as Wait But Why, I would say mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. I like Facebook the most because it's just, when I post something there, it's the image and it links to the article. And then there's a lot of discussion below it. It really gets into its own real discussion of a comment section more than Twitter does. So I still like Facebook for, as a creator.
I have an idea for a cure. Once this, big heavy post is out, you can do an update of the Facebook, characters, of your second blog post, for Instagram. Very lightweighted, but, I'd be very interested in seeing the
Instagram
characters. Oh,
yeah, that is interesting, actually. Like, and Twitter, too, really needs it, too. But, yeah, Instagram is a good one because there's... Although, the thing is, I felt bad about
that
post.
There's also just so much love.
There is, but in that first Facebook post, I did feel bad because I was really... That's because I wasn't anonymous at the time. The first 6 months of the blog, the first 2 months, I was anonymous. I didn't put my name out there yet. And also we were trying to get attention. So I didn't, right now I think about my readers and I'm like, I don't want to hurt my, you know, readers' feelings if it's not the right moment to, if I don't have to. And I was really mean about like people who are like, you know, I don't know. I just feel like I was really judgy and mean on that one. And I don't want to be quite to that level because I don't want to make people feel bad about just being a human. So if people are like,
No, but it's educational, and it is judgmental, but it's also important even to save the people from themselves, from their own uncontrolled social media behavior.
Well, because I think the thing that is important to say is like, I think it's like the Wild West of social etiquette, where you know,
Tim, yeah. Yeah. Oh, sorry. The I think the mammoth can play a big role in this.
Oh,
post
the mammoth is all the right. It's who's posting? Is it you or is it your mammoth?
And like, I think it's mostly the mammoth.
And when the mammoth is posting, it's going to be this transparent kind of image crafting. You're just going to be posting just to make people think certain things about you, and it's like that's a selfish thing.
Exactly.
Why are you taking everyone's time with that? Instead, why don't you just post something more like authentic about? I don't know. So yeah.
That's exactly the feeling that I have, especially whenever I do something on Instagram, I feel as if I'm looking into the mirror in public and really watching myself in detail in the mirror, and everyone watches me doing this. And this feels super, super uncomfortable.
But see, the thing is that I got, when I did the Facebook thing, I did that. I was like, you're just doing this to make people think things about you, or you're just being narcissistic and thinking anyone cares. And then I was kind of like, there's worse things. Like the Wild West of like etiquette is really problematic in the way people are like mean and cruel on like social media, and the way they would never be in person. That should be criticized. But if someone is just being, you kind of brag to your friends sometimes. Can't you be, if you're lonely, isn't this a way to kind of get it? Isn't it okay to get attention? Like, that's what I felt bad. I was like, a lot of this is just people just wanting simple human things. The thing that is really bad, and that's what I'm partly what I'm writing about here, is this. Right now, there is absolutely no rules. There's no wisdom with how people interact when it comes to like just shaming a human being, just destroying, wanting to destroy them and shame them and ruin their career because they said something and they used the wrong word, and that shows that they're offensive forever. And they're deeply bad as a human. It's just insane, childish, middle school, like middle school kids, like kind of stuff going on that it by adults, and it has power and it's a real problem. So that is what I am currently obsessed with more than like. That's so much more harmful right now than like all the annoying things.
Mm. Is it the panic monster acting there?
Yeah. So the panic monster is there for all the procrastinators, or really anytime you're having a panic, he's this monster that's dormant, and then once you're panicked about,
It's only associated to panic to procrastination. Okay.
Well, not necessarily, but when the it's when a deadline gets too close or whatever. And you're procrastinating, he starts freaking out in your head, and then you.
Yeah, I had many rendezvous with the panic monster the recent days. It's like end of the year. But Tim, we're totally breaking the rule of the rapid fire question with short answers.
Okay, let's keep going.
But one last question, which is, so the post will be out in early January. What will your next year be about?
I would say more February
about?
Than January.
Okay. So sometime early next year.
Yeah.
What will your next year be about? Once this is out,
well,
once you gave birth.
So I actually I'm going to be doing a book, a real book that's meant to be a book in book format. So I'm going to be working on that, and I'm going to be publishing the podcast every couple of weeks, and I'm going to try to do one blog post a month. So I'm going to keep something going, and then once that book is done, I'm extremely excited to get back into weekly posting. I miss just short posts, changing topics a lot. So I'm really very looking forward to really going back to regular articles and regular podcasts. So I'm excited to have regular interaction with my readers again, who I miss. I don't talk
to
them ever.
Sounds like another 2 years when you're getting from the one labor of the blog post into the next labor of a book.
I know. Well, the book
so
has been
in 2 years,
there
will be weekly blog posts from you again. That's nice.
Yeah, it's going to be stuff again. And I'm excited.
No, I'm really
about
looking for the podcast. Looking forward to the podcast.
Okay, good. Yeah, thanks. And I'll look forward to more episodes of yours. Thanks for having me on.
Tim, thank you. Very nice talking to you.
All right, talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That was Tim. Thank you for listening. If you don't know Wait But Why yet, check it out. If you're German, you also find some of his articles translated into German on Welt.de. I'll link them in the show notes. Hope you're excited for this big post he announced. Our expectations are high, Tim. Thanks, danke, and bye-bye.